Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, here we are around the table, which is great. Martin has had some idea of the background of where Camera Department started. It's through a private email forum for cameramen based in the UK who shoot primarily for British companies producing docs and sort of factual location programming. We've been discussing for quite some time whether there is any chance that we as a sort of a loose collective could form some sort of freelance documentary camera branch that would be that would transcend the regional branches because of our sort of the nature of where we are in the UK and abroad, and basically become a sort of a national documentary branch. And it's, that's the first question. And, okay. And also, if we could, what kind of numbers would we need to make it a viable proposition?
So it's a direct question to me.
It is.
Okay. to answer the easy bit of it first, I mean, all I can do, you know, I'm a trade union official, so you know, the rule book is what it is.
Yeah.
The minimum number of members to form a branch of BECTU is 10, so there's no problem about numbers.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, few branches are as small as 10, but that's the minimum. The issue in terms of our current structure is that, and I'll try and be as free of jargon as I can, we've got 5 industrial divisions of the union, 2 of which are the divisions that include freelance members in film and TV. And I imagine that in terms of the members of a documentary camera branch, there are some in one of those divisions and some in the other. Mm-hmm. One is the London production division, which, as the name suggests, is based in London in the South East, and it organises... Most of the branches in London Production Division are craft branches. The camera branch, the sound branch, the art department branch, the grips branch, etc. For members who live and work primarily in London and the South East. And then there is the regional production division, where we have regional, geographical freelance branches that are cross-grade, cross-department, such as the Western Freelance Branch, which Andy chairs, that covers all freelance grades who live in that geographical area. Now, a documentary camera branch is, A, not unimaginable, but, B, would need to be... We'd need to change those arrangements, because, if I'm understanding you correctly, Jonathan, it would, by definition, cut across...
Absolutely.
That divide, I mean, you have to, you know, because it would need to be what it needed to be to do its job.
Yeah.
And it doesn't quite fit into that structure.
Yeah, and that's why I think, speaking frankly, a lot of the people have lost interest in the union or never want to be part of it, because from when it was, when the union was in a strong position, it had Yorkshire Television, it had Granada, it had sort of BBC Manchester. Yeah. There were large staff bases to call upon.
That's right.
Now, all of those bases are gone.
That's right.
And we have this disparate sort of diaspora of people across the country who are now sort of, you know, I live in Sheffield. If I spend most of my time either working in London or abroad,
yeah.
You know, very rarely do I do work in my home base. And I'm sure the same goes for everyone else around this table.
Yeah.
We go because the discussion that was had during the OB, you know, certain OB directors are wanting sort of certain camera to do certain headshots. Well, they're just bringing them from wherever. The same happens to us. And I personally think that sort of the regional branch structure is outmoded in this day and age for what we would try and do to get this... We are effectively already a branch without any union backing, because we've organised ourselves together, we've brought ourselves together on the internet, and I would like to think that we could take that forward. And through BECTU, we would get ourselves a seat at a table, because that's ideally what we would all want. Now, we're all used to sort of negotiating for ourselves because we've had to, because since we've all gone out on our own, we've bought equipment or we have to rent equipment, we negotiate every single day. But there are certain issues that we can't, as individuals, can't do on our own. We are going to need support going forward, and the only people we can get from is BECTU, because... Whether the BBC or ITV manager or whoever likes it, they do have your ear. You knock on their door and you do get to sit down with them. So we, ultimately, for the people around this table and other people, if we can convince them to come on board, if that's what they would like as well, to have have Bektu behind them. So if we have an issue or we want to go for a negotiated rate structure for labour, kit is a different thing altogether, because that's a whole can of worms. But in terms of rate structures for labour, that we are going to need some sort of backing from Bektu. And having the original regional structure is not, I don't think, is actually going to help, unfortunately.
I mean, I hear everything you're saying.
We want to
make this work as well.
Good.
And this is how the best initiatives start, I have to say. You know, they don't start by someone like me at head office sort of magically making something happen and breathing life into a group of members somewhere. Members get themselves together around some issue or common identity that makes sense to them in their working lives, and then the union, you know, then there's something for us all to work. So this is great.
Another thing to add to what...
Okay, let me lock my...
Yeah, go
on. You carry on, though. I don't want to lose my thread, though.
I know what I'm going to say.
I mean, three things. Firstly, you're absolutely right. Regional production division, I think it's... I don't think I need to ask you to turn the sound off in order for me to say that RPD is probably the most sort of difficult division of the union at the moment, for all the reasons you've just said. You know, its logic some years ago was that there was a network of significant ITV companies and BBC centres around which freelance members, in a sense, could cluster, and from which they got most of their work, and that simply isn't the case anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the shape of the industry in the country has completely changed. So, you know, RPD is a much more difficult division than LPD in terms of its day-to-day functioning. There's no question about that. LPD works quite well because there's such a critical mass of production work, especially film commercials work, around London. It provides a natural industrial focus. It's different outside London and South East. That's a constant debate that goes on. So, A, it is absolutely not impossible that you could contribute to that continuing debate, which is already underway, about how best to provide a structure that works for our freelance members outside London and the South East, that could lead to, you know, a national documentary camera branch or a national documentary freelance branch, or whatever we might call it, factual freelance branch, I don't know, coming into existence. Short of that, there is absolutely no bar at all, whatever its relationship might be to camera department as it now exists, to there being a Bektu network in exactly the same way as the outside broadcast network, whose meeting you just witnessed, works, because that cuts across branches and across divisions, but it needs to be there because we've got a large number of members who work on OBs, you know, and we have to create something that works for them. So in a sense, we could decide today that we would convene such a network and think about how we'd do that.
Okay.
And thirdly, just in terms of practical progress, I mean, you've mentioned the BBC, which I guess is probably the single largest employer of documentary and factual cameramen and camerawomen. Now, we've got, as of last year, we've got an arrangement with the BBC where they will now recognise us for collective bargaining on behalf of any group of freelance members, so long as we can show, so long as we can, in a sense, define an area that we and the BBC can both agree on, that makes sense in terms of their structures and sense in terms of our members, and where we can demonstrate that we've got at least 35% density of union members. Now, that's there as a sort of standing offer. The area where we've identified 35% membership so far is in drama. So we are in discussions now with the BBC about the shape of a collective agreement for freelance members working in TV drama, which is part of Visions. Mm-hmm. And I'm not an expert in the structure of the BBC. If we can identify, if we can come up in a sense with the right definition in terms of how they organise their business to cover documentary production or documentary camera production, and demonstrate that we as a union have got the right level of support in that area, then the BBC, in a sense, the BBC will sit down and talk to us. They will, because they've already agreed to. We just have to get the definition right and the numbers right.
I would suggest that sort of for this to go ahead, we would probably be the biggest single group going. Because drama has a... They have large crews, but again, they are subdivided.
Yeah.
Whereas the successes you had in Scotland and with the natural history people, they were, again, numbers in tens.
Yes.
We are potentially talking about hundreds of people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but the trouble with our group, Jonathan, which is what I want to get across, I'm part of the London production division, that Martin has said is so successful. It's successful.
No, I just said it's more successful than RPD.
More. It's successful for drama cameramen and film cameramen because there's a gang of them together.
Yeah.
We go out as single people.
Yeah.
We need a different way of getting our messages to and from it. This is where the internet is what has brought camera department together. It's what will bring Bechtu documentary department
together.
It will
bring it closer to its membership.
It will bring it together. He's up in Leeds. He's in Leeds. He's in Yorkshire. I'm in Surrey. Charlie's over there. But everybody's either at a studio at Elstree, or if they're in film and what and that, and I see London Production Division as very unsuccessful in terms of us cameramen. This camera department is what's going to make a very big difference to every single area, because it's easy, because they can get on the internet. They don't have to take a half hour to an hour train ride or come up to Birmingham like we have today or come down to Birmingham. If we can get this internet connection going, we can get that 35% very easily for you and the BBC negotiation. Whereas if we can't get it, I don't think we'll get the 35% at all.
I mean, we pulled this together from, as I explained to you before, from one very specific issue relating to Panorama.
Yeah.
And the core group of people, with 15 people within a weekend. Now, every cameraman here around this table knows three or four of the cameramen that not necessarily each other would know. So that's by sort of not even 3 degrees of separation. So we could quite easily pull together a large number of people. And I think once the ball started rolling, we would have other people saying, actually, I want to be part of that bandwagon. You know, we have had that with camera department. We remember, we have no web presence whatsoever. We're not advertised anywhere, but I know that we are being discussed because other cameramen have mentioned it to producers they're working with because that's what we do. We crisscross the country in our cars. We go up to Scotland. We get out to London. We go to the South Coast, wherever, and people chat. Now, that synergy has not been lost, and word has begun to spread, and people know that we're out there. People know that sort of. We are having discussions about rates and what we should be charging for HD equipment and sort of certain production coordinators that give us a hard time. But that's our private stuff. Out here in the open, we can pull together in terms of having the backing of Bechtu would mean that we are able to stand up to BBC, to ITV, to other companies to say, you know what, we have an issue here and we've now got a seat at the table, which is what... So we're all in agreement that this can happen.
Mm.
But as I say, as Mike's point about the internet, that would need to be the focus, because a lot of people are not interested, in, especially if you've done a 12 or 14-hour day.
I know.
It's like, you know, I've got up at 4, driven to London, come back at 10, doing my emails, prepping kit for the next day. Last thing I want to do is drive to a...
Yeah, but the Johnson film people do this shit as well. It's just that they're in one dollar where... Everywhere.
Yeah, we're not just trying to pull this small group together has taken some doing.
For one day is difficult.
We're just so split up. That's our problem.
We are completely paraphrased.
I go to your meetings in London. I'm the only documentary cameraman there.
You are.
And if I've said to you on occasions, I would like this looking into, and I look around, somebody's seconded it, nobody knows what I'm talking about because they're from drama and from film.
Yeah, commercials.
Okay. So to move this forward, what would you need from camera department? We've certainly got members. We've had an internal debate amongst ourselves. We've lost one member, unfortunately, because he didn't want the way this was going. But if we can show from the group that's here... show some degree of success and the movement in the right direction, what would you need us to do next?
I'd suggest the next things to do would be, first of all, I think camera department should absolutely continue to exist in its own right,
yes,
independently, anyway.
Yeah.
Because that maximises everybody's options,
yeah,
to have that sort of carrying on. I think probably, I mean, I've said the most practical industrial thing where I can offer progress right now is in terms of the BBC. But I don't lead on our negotiations with the BBC. It's actually the General Secretary, it's Jerry Morrissey, you know, my boss, who leads, because it's such a crucial initiative, you know, so we need to sort of fly the flag. So I suggest the next thing should be that we should agree a point of contact between me and the camera department. I mean, whether it's you, Jonathan, or whether it's, you know, whoever it may be. But that I should have a talk with Jerry about the politics of getting together an initiative. Because I don't want to come back to you guys and say, right, we need to start getting the numbers together. Mm-hmm. Because I imagine that probably, first of all, we'll need to decide the timing of our move to the BBC to say, we now want to talk to you about recognition in this area. And using the drama model, and it will be different in your area, so just sort of forgive me, but using the drama model, what we did there was to agree a sort of a menu of representative productions where we could then actually compare information on who was on the crew and how many of those people were BECTU members in order to reach our 35% sort of threshold. And we had to do that on a confidential basis. And we were obviously, by definition, telling them who our members were on those crews. We were, which is quite a sensitive thing to do, especially for freelance union members.
You had to divulge this to the BBC.
We did. And we did it on confidential grounds, that information would go no further. They signed documents and so on, so that it would be used for one purpose only, which was to do the numbers.
That disclosure, but that sort of, for want of a bit, that disclosure process, where does that... Does that information go to production management level, like people who would book us as crews?
No.
Or are we talking people above that?
No. Whether above or to the site, went to HR, went to human resources.
Right.
Who have got no involvement. They don't know who you are as individually.
Yeah, so there's no chance of nitpicking, saying, well, actually, he's been talking to the union, we're not having him back again.
Assuming they kept to their promises, and I've got no reason to believe they didn't, okay, genuinely.
So
and actually, they need a relationship.
So
with
what
us.
Do you think they did with that information?
What they did was took that.
Did they check?
They checked. I mean, basically, we did the number crunching together.
Yeah, but did HR take these names away and check?
No.
And work on those.
No. They sat down in a meeting with a colleague of mine, and they produced. You know, they'd already produced the full crew lists for those selected dramas, and we came to them and we said, "Well, we've looked at those names, and these are the members of ours who we can prove are union members, because here is their front page from the database that prove they're a paid-up bona fide union member."
How does that fit in with us?
So what you're saying is
I will get a phone call today for a job tomorrow. How do you get a crew list when there's not one that exists?
That's why I'm saying I think we need a different approach in this area, because the nature of the productions is so different.
On much, much shorter lead times.
And I think, number one, we need to decide on the timetable of an approach to the BBC to say we want to open this discussion. Then I'd want to be coming back to you guys, I think, to say, right, now what are our ideas, given the way your work goes, given the way the projects are organised, the scale of the projects, the turnaround time, etc., what is a reasonable way of actually proving that we've got 35% or more BECTU members across the piece working on these types of production.
Is the BBC negotiable about whether this disclosure?
Yeah.
I mean, would they accept the fact that you didn't want to disclose the name to them?
I have to say, I think that would be a problem, because...
Because I can imagine a lot of individuals within documentaries would not want that to happen.
I entirely understand that.
You're on your own. It's not like you're part of a drama unit.
I know. And I mean, it took in drama, where there is that more of a sense of being protected by the team, still, actually, you're protected by the team while you're on the job.
Yeah.
Once you're off the job, you're just waiting for your phone call again.
So how do you quantify? So, if the last time I worked for the BBC was probably about 8 months ago.
Yeah.
So do I qualify to be one of that 35%?
If we were doing it now... we went back, if I remember rightly, a year or 18 months in terms of the drama productions we were looking at.
Yeah.
It had to be as current as we could reasonably get, because what's the point otherwise?
Sure.
So, yes, you know, in principle, however we sort of cut the cake in this area, It might be that a show was chosen on which you worked. And so the BBC, in principle, might say, OK, this is the name of the cameraman on this job.
Yeah.
And then if we did the same process as last time, we would come back and say, well, here is proof that he is a Bec2 member.
Again, Andy, my programme know I'm Bec2, but they say they're not worried because they know Bec2's too weak to harm them. I'm sorry, but they do know this. I mean, so I wouldn't get frightened
I'm just trying to work out how you do it because you've got a large body of people who are very vulnerable, some of which will not be working on a regular basis for the BBC, and some have. So how do you classify the ones that do not work for BBC on a regular basis? As I said, I probably worked for the BBC probably about 8 months ago.
Sure.
So...
You're still on their books, though, aren't you? Andrew?
You're still.
You still have a vendor number.
Could you have a call today?
Is it not fair to say that anybody who's got a vendor number?
That's a very good point.
Should be entitled to be included in this 35%.
Yeah, no, that would be a way of doing it. There'd still be, need to be a mutual process of disclosure.
Yeah.
And it would be on a confidential basis, and it wouldn't be with the people who book you.
Yeah.
But I mean, just as. We need them to tell us who is the list of vending numbers.
Do you think they go away and verify the names you give them?
They can't. I mean, if we're showing them the documentary evidence from our database, they have to take that in good faith as we have to take their list of vendor numbers in good faith.
What they didn't do was
go away with the documents. We showed them to them, and they said, "Okay, thank you," and that was it.
I think they would be very, very churlish. I mean, also, I don't think, given the state of the BBC, that they've actually got the manpower or the sort of technical nous to actually start nitpicking between names on projects. But having, I think the qualification is, if you have a SAP vendor number as a freelance cameraman for freelance camera services, Z009 or whatever this classification is, for them, that would be the criteria for you saying, this person works for the BBC, because... we've all got phones. We could all get a phone call for tomorrow for any variety of projects because another camera has dropped out or something's just come up or last minute interview. That should be the criteria. I think
that sounds very sensible.
You're on call and you're on the books.
Yeah, because quite frankly, there are times when I've had phone calls, they say, "Oh, do you have a vendor number? Yes, I do. Does your sound man? If you get a sound man, because they don't want to go to the process of having to set up a new vendor number. They want people who are already on the system."
Yes.
So I think that should be the criteria. There's two things I want to sort out. The camera department sort of factual location forum. How does that work? Because I obviously came in for the OB meeting. How does that work? Does it have a series of structured meetings where there's an open interchange a bit like this twice or three times a year? And there's two key points that I think most people here would back me on in terms of where we've all lost work is in, and that's why we're going for the BBC first. Because if you go to the BBC first, they tend to follow, other broadcasters tend to follow suit, whether it's technically or whether it's politically.
Yeah.
The area is self-shooting. Self-shooting, the cat is out of the bag with that one. We should have done this years ago, but we didn't, because we were all lone wolves minding our own business with our own camera kits and our own problems, thinking it's not going to affect us. In fact, it has now affected us. It has. What's happened, there are so many programmes due to cost basis and cost production they dropped the assistants, they dropped the electricians, they dropped the sound men, they now drop the cameramen. We have lost work to people who are predominantly the preserve of the NUJ. They have taken over shooting with cameras. They may be quite good at it. Most of them are quite appalling, quite frankly. And we have to pick up the pieces when they can be bothered to get a cameraman on board. Now, there's a lot of guys around this table whose bread and butter work in terms of factual, documentary, non-fiction programming has been lost to people, producers or directors or APs and researchers, shooting with small prosumer-based cameras.
And full-size, Jonathan?
And full-size cameras. Well, I gave you the example of Carmel. Yeah. But what's happening is they have been given the ability to do that because they say, well, there isn't the money. And the reason, and they've been given the equipment through a wholly funded subsidiary of the BBC called DV Solutions.
Yeah.
Now, that's public money that's being used. I've spent over £500,000 on kits since 1996. I have made investment, not just for the BBC, but I have made investment to work for lots of other operations. Now, I've probably spent more money than other cameramen, because I explained to you, I do a lot of work for the American Network, so I bought PAL and NTSC kit. But most cameramen, as a freelance cameraman, if you've bought a full-size camera and ancillary kit, you're going to spend between £100,000 to £150,000. The BBC is trying to stop you from using that gear. They're trying to say, well, you get the gear from DV Solutions. Why? Because we get it for free. They have completely undermined the freelance market. That's why the likes of what Andy was saying about Films 59 in Bristol, to try and compete, because there isn't... Is there a DV Solutions in Bristol?
No.
Right.
Well, actually, not to my knowledge. I don't actually know.
Okay.
We've got a deal with a local... I saw it on the GTC website. BBC Bristol got a deal...
Films 59.
From 59, and they're getting kits.
Well, that's because... I would suggest they've had to do that deal because there isn't a DV Solutions in Bristol. Yes. There's a DV Solutions in Manchester. Constantly, productions are saying to us, well, why should we use your gear? Well... We have kits that are for free. The BBC Current Affairs Department at White City, for instance, they pay a tranche of money from their annual operating budget, which goes directly to DB Solutions. That then means that they can have as much kit as they want for as long as they want for nothing. It's a zero cost to them.
You have a situation where, like, a director has a camera in the back of his boot just in case.
Yeah, I've worked on productions where they've used me as a cameraman, but because the production... is a fluid production and interviewees are problematic and can't be pinned down and they can't book crews, the producer says, I tell you what, I can shoot, keeps a DV cam camera and a tripod and a bit of sound underneath their desk for 5 or 6 weeks or in the boot they can't, so they can respond. It's creative program making, but it takes away from our investment.
But it's
and
worse.
They're not being charged, maybe.
It's worse.
No, no, it's free. It's for free.
It's for free.
It's worse than that.
Surely.
I work on BBC Click. Anyone heard of it?
Yeah.
I used to shoot the entire programme. I now shoot only links. Every single feature on it, apart from when I go abroad. When I'm abroad, they're paying me every day, so therefore they use me. I shoot the whole programme then. But throughout the entire year, they are going out with Z1 semi-pro cameras, shooting all the features. I warned Bec2 and I warned everybody on GTC about this 7 years ago.
Mm.
I was upset with Bec2 because I did say it was the NUJ's fault, but you wanted to stay pally with them. And as far as I'm concerned, the NUJ is our enemy. I'm sorry, they are not our brothers.
Mm.
And then when it came to the GTC and saying about all these people with little cameras, everybody on the GT said, I'm all right, Jack. I don't want to listen to you, Mike Connolly. Things have shifted on. We've now gone from Mike Connolly to this lot that are here today. It's going to shift on where they wipe us out. And we've got... They are going to wipe out the cameraman. There's no two ways about that. That's going to happen. It might not happen tomorrow, but it will happen 10 or 15
there
years.
There has been this drip, drip, drip exposure where sort of it's been piecemeal erosion, and because cameramen have always been seen to be the sort of the safest pair of hands on the shoe, because collectively we have a lot of experience, we can, you know, and for the sake of our jobs, well, we've actually offered to do a bit more and not charge for it, or, you know, we've all asked a few questions, or we've all helped the production when it's a junior member of the production team because they don't quite sure what they're doing, but you want to get this done, you want to be seen to be willing. Well, we've had this kind of drip, 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 and now that goodwill has now been well and truly trespassed on, and what has happened is now we're just seen as, like, you know, we're seen as an expensive one of these, a walking wallet, where, you know, we're seen as mercenary because of the investment we've made, where they just turn and say, you know what, we've got all this stuff for free, and we've got DV Solutions, and we've got people who can do your job, who are actually on a cost basis far cheaper than you. Now, the NUJ argument is a. I wouldn't go so far as to say they are the enemy, because I've spoken to NUJ members within the BBC, so I do a lot of work in current affairs. They are very sympathetic to us. They don't like being forced to use the small cameras as much as they do, because they know that it's detrimental to the product. They know that we're craft technicians and we have trained as such and continue to train and get better. These guys get given a 2 or 3 day course and then told to go out into the street to do their interview or into their person's house. They don't like it as much as we do, but they are forced into the same situation. I think there should be some, one of the points I'm making is there should be some synergy between the two unions to try and combat this, or to have some sort of working practice, some working code between the two unions. So any UBJ members can put their hand up and say, actually, this is a craft cameraman's job, rather than saying, okay, I can do it. Because that's where we're losing out here. So whereas before, when there was a vibrant ITV network, a vibrant independent sector, and vibrant BBC regional centres, we could take our toys and say, sorry, I'm not going to play. But now, there is nothing. ITV has become coalescing to one lump. I'm looking at, I work for some Americans. We've got the BBC as a whole is fragmented and is its own little personal fiefdoms. And the ITV is what it is. And you've got Sky. There's nowhere left for us to go. We now cannot say, I'm sorry, I want to go and work for them because the conditions are better, they understand what I do, and they understand my craft. That doesn't exist anymore. We are stuck with the BBC that we have, and they are the biggest player in the market, unfortunately. You know, so from all these sides, whether it's DB Solutions, the NUJ allowing its members to do sort of camera work, and from the compression of budgets from all sides, we are now being squeezed into a space like that. It feels like we started off on the Isle of Wight. We're now on a traffic island in the centre of Birmingham, all crowding together.
I think the other issue is because it's been going on for so long, to my mind, it all stemmed from the DV Brigade when they brought out the DV PD 100 cameras. Whilst the quality was inferior, we now have people, researchers, APs, whatever, that their concept of camera work is running around with one of those kind of cameras. But they have now been promoted to, producer level or editor level or whatever, and they're just the concept of them understanding what it takes to do camera work with a full size camera, and just the concept of I need a break. You can't be running around for 12 hours without a break, because they've never had to do it, because for starters they've been utilizing smaller cameras, but they were also doing other things as well. So I think it's a problem. We have to, it's not going to go away. We know it's not going to go away, but what we're trying to do is to get some kind of cohesion.
Restrict it.
Restrict it, but also I do see that, forgive me, but I don't see any dialogue or any constructive dialogue happening between BECTA and the NUJ. Now, I'm not saying it's solely the NUJ's fault, but I do think there needs to be some kind of dialogue there to rein it in.
Enough's enough, I think. From our point of view,
the original agreement was, I believe they could use a small camera in an emergency and no more than a 30-second piece. Mm. And that was a back to NUJ.
The people who are using these cameras, Mike.
Mm?
NUJ members are not the people who, in the main, are using these cameras to self-shoot.
Well, they are in my section.
If you look at White City, there's a whole range of people who are not involved in journalism at all. Mm. And they, I would have thought, they make up the main body of self-shooters.
But they're probably not in any union.
They're sort of AP.
All researchers.
To my mind, what's happened?
Producers.
There's some sort of conspiracy going on with BBC to pursue self-shooting, and they're not. They're keeping secret the real costs of self-shooting in terms of the significant increase in editing hours.
Yes. Post-production. It seems that they can. They're too expensive.
I'm pretty sure this is one of these management consultancy. Mm. Idea is that you to reduce your costs, you cut out the expensive, you cut out the fat, if you like, and you send your own production staff to shoot your own material. Now, I was chatting to Mike coming from the car. Well, you know, on his programme, you know, there's been an increase in the number of producers over a period of time, which looks to me pretty much coincides with the number of production staff self-shooting. So you have an increased number of production people, you have an increased number of hours spent editing, and I'm not convinced, you know, the BBC is actually saving any money, which it claims to be doing. And it's almost as though they're hiding behind this veil of, we've got to have self-shooters, because that's what we've committed to, in the belief that it's going to bring down production costs. But I'm not really convinced that this is the case, and I think this needs to be exposed a lot more than it has been.
They always, every time you complain about sort of, I mean, this is quite happened a lot on the GCC forum, where people complain about the quality of certain types of work or the camera work, and the BBC standard duty officer complaint is response to the complaint is, oh, we are trying new and exploratory innovative digital techniques. Now, Robin will back me up here. When Central had very strong cost accountants, didn't they? They ruled the roost. They did an accountancy spreadsheet, and they worked out it was cheaper to have proper crews shoot something rather than allowing inexperienced non-craft personnel loose with smaller cameras, because they said, you know what, 10-hour day, hour off for lunch, we have a fixed cost base, we know what it's going to cost, we know it'll be right the first time, pretty much. Whereas if we line these guys out with small cameras, they overshoot, we have to fix stuff in post-production, audio, editing, all these sort of things. And the accountants at Central said, unless there's a valid reason, because it's either it's undercover footage or it's a sort of grabbed moment that's unrepeatable, if there is a reason to use a real crew, use them. It's cheaper, and that's what the accountants said at Central.
Editors, picture editors now, can cost as much, if not more, than some of us with all our kit. So therefore, if a craft cameraman shoots a programme and it takes 2 weeks to edit, and all these bunch of amateurs are going out with small and large cameras, Martin, and that same programme then takes 4 to 6 weeks to edit, that's a massive amount. None of this costing is being accurately assessed.
The BBC do not divulge the cost of editing.
No, they don't. I mean, we've asked the argument's been made many times before, but it's a question of getting the figures.
Yes.
Freedom of information.
What I also find interesting in these arguments is we are talking about the BBC, yet all of us here work for other companies that also work for the BBC as independents. Most of the time, when I'm working for, say, Mentorn or Blakeway or one of the other large indies for the BBC, my terms and conditions are better than it is when I come to the BBC. So how can that be? These people are a commercial organisation making a profit out of the programme, yet when I do the same panorama, for instance, directly to the sort of desk at Y City, oh, I'm sorry, we can't afford this, we can't afford that, or would you mind taking that off? Or you've overcharged us for this. There's a cultural thing here. So an independent production that's making a profit can afford to pay me properly and a two-man crew, yet these people I'm working for directly, it's not. So there's a sea change.
It doesn't seem to be based
on... There's a complete disconnect.
I think it is a cultural thing, because we see exactly the same thing in other areas of production. We see it in drama, where, you know, a BBC commissioned drama, the independent will pay better rates than a BBC in-house directly produced drama. And they have the same profile and, you know, blah, 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 they're comparable products. And yet that's what we see. I believe it is a cultural thing. I believe that there are cultural factors at play within the BBC, within the way in which they go about their internal management and, you know, the way in which people perceive themselves as earning brownie points from their departmental superiors in terms of what they've got to deliver.
I've seen that a lot, actually.
It's not about real money. It's not about real accounting. It's about all those other pressures, which are also real, but they're driven by different criteria. Where the BBC is vulnerable, by virtue of everything we're also saying about them, is that it's the biggest beast in the jungle. It's meant to be the sort of, you know, the beating heart of quality broadcasting, public service broadcasting in this country. There, it seems to me, on all these questions, it is potentially vulnerable. And I mean, at times in Broadcast magazine, for what it's worth, the debate does flare up about, you know, lack of technical skills in production, I mean, whether it's around self-shooting or some other area, about how just how bad something looked on the screen.
Mm.
I think that's part of the response here. I mean, I sort of do agree that, to a degree, the cat's out of the bag on self-shooting as such. I mean, with regard to the BBC and NUJ, I do tend to agree, it's not individual members of the NUJ who are the main problem here. It is almost certainly non-union, probably quite young, quite inexperienced people working as APs or as researchers, you know, whatever their job title might be, who for whom is, they're not being presented with a choice. They will do this if they want their career to go anywhere in their current job.
They're very vulnerable people.
They
Martin.
Are. They
and
are.
The VJs, I mean...
But if they're producing crap images and crap sound, they're all to be...
The licence pay has been cheated.
Exactly.
And I think that's another
And the BBC is very vulnerable on that.
Have the BBC and other especially senior with an unfriendly broadcasters government. Not realised that we're watching programmes now between 40 and 55-inch screens and pictures and high definition? You see a really well-crafted programme. In fact, I rang Jonathan after a panorama recently, and I said, did you see that interview? I'd seen his name on the credits, and I thought, you know, I just bloody hoped that Jonathan wasn't responsible. I didn't think it was for a minute, but it was a terrible interview, and it stood out. A lot of it was 90% was good, or 80%.
Yes.
And then there was this really important interview in the middle of panorama, and it was absolutely appalling, wasn't it? And it turned out, I think, that the producer had shot it.
Yeah.
The lighting was all wrong, the setting and the framing. So the BBC, unfortunately, are policing their own standards, and that can't be right either. Nobody's standing back saying, this should not be transmitted anymore. There's nobody keeping an eye on the technical side.
No.
So they can get away with all this self-shooting and, you know, others picking up cameras, which is, you know, is detrimental to the licence payer. And people who want to see a decent made programme.
I'm sure you've
heard. I was just going to add, sorry about Andrew, the DV solutions to go on to that. I mean, I really do think that is an absolute scandal for a public corporation like the BBC, Martin, to be running a department, buying in all their own kit that is probably not audited, and people are losing, breaking equipment, and for them to set their own rate how they amortise their equipment that is against all the private enterprise in this country, people like ourselves, surely that is anti-competitive and a serious corporate misdemeanour that is almost reportable to Brussels, something like that, for them to rig the they're rigging the marketplace against private companies and individuals.
It's a similar sort of logic for the web. People have complained about the BBC's website being rapaciously big and meaning they can't make a profit.
Can I disagree with what you just said?
Go on, man.
I work for, I do quite a bit of work for a particular commercial production company, and they have their own kit, and it's not clear to me how the money changes hands between the programmes, the individual programmes, and their technical facilities. But I don't have any problems with DV Solutions because it's just a BBC department. And it makes, if I was running a business, I would be buying my own equipment for my own business and hiring people to use that equipment, just like an editor who would come in to use an edit suite or a camera kit. Any company, the BBC included, is perfectly free to go and buy its own equipment.
Yeah, but we deal with real money, Andrew, sorry. We deal with real money, don't we? BBC is not real money. They can hide all cover things up, surely.
I mean, the thing with DV Solutions is that they've had several methods of internal accounting, and they've gone from one system to another. One time it was just like a paper transaction, if you like, and it was done on a daily basis, and now currently it's done on a no money changes hands per day, and as a consequence individuals within production are just hanging onto that kit. I mean, it comes out of their program budget at the end of the year as sort of as units or whatever. It's not very clear to me, but it basically is an internal accounting process. And and that's the way they've chosen to go. You can't stop a company having
it's skewing of the system, because there is a reliance on people like us, yes, who have invested.
Yes,
we make the phone call saying, yes, Jonathan, yes, Mike, Andrew, yes, Ian, Robin, yes, can you go off, do an interview tomorrow?
Yes.
Have got some gear, great, fantastic. Yes. And then the next day,
the same people. The weekend.
Can you we need to save some money now. Would you mind coming to White City and picking up the gear? It's having the cake and eat it.
Yeah. But what is wrong? I will agree with you on one.
I'm surprised you said that, though, Andrew.
Well, I have to go with Andrew.
I can see it's objective. You're telling the BBC how to run their own business.
Yeah, I mean,
where I agree with Jonathan is that you do get young professional coordinators,
mm-hmm,
who ring you up and say, but I can get this equipment from DB Solutions for £30 a day. Now, they're saying that out of ignorance, because what they're saying to you, the impression they're saying is, you know, I can knock you down in price because I'm playing you off against our in-house facilities.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we just
that is morally wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that tends to be done out of ignorance. Because these youngsters they are in a position
of power, though.
It's financially. Yes.
I'm not trying to tell BBC how to run the business, but I do think that this aspect is totally unreasonable because of the way that, I mean, in broadcasting in this country, surely people are on the staff or the freelance.
Yeah.
Sort of freelance is probably 50% of the market, and maybe staff is 50. Martin will probably know the figures.
Yeah.
But for them to have taking on this DV Solutions,
yeah,
to undermine all the individuals and people who have had a long established...
I DV Solutions would be totally unaware of your view that you feel as though...
Well, yeah, because they're not in the real world.
Yeah, but no, they're not.
The thing is, DV Solutions purports to be like another hire firm. It just happens within the BEEB. But it's not, because it's not run on commercial basis.
Exactly. If you're an individual company, you can't rent out equipment on that basis.
These cameramen who are freelance as we are, going into the BBC and picking up a BBC camera to do their daily work. Now, to me, that's exactly the same as DV Solutions. Are we objecting to freelance cameramen walking into BBC News, picking up a BBC camera and going off and doing their work? We're not.
The problem is that they say the DV Solutions rate is a perfectly reasonable commercial rate, which it isn't. There's no way it can be.
If they're
saying we can get the DV Solutions for 150 quid for a full kit, so we expect you to provide it for that.
That's not viable. That is
the crux of the issue. If the BBC rightly wants to have its own factors of production, it's entirely able to do so. What the problem is when it's using, it's leveraging its muscle with those factors of production to then exert influence on its external market.
That's not the BBC, that's ourselves in the production.
It's the BBC.
I think sometimes in the majority of cases, they're doing it out of ignorance.
I think you're being generous, Andrew. Our strong point is
to show how much money is being wasted by self-shooters.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to come back around to.
Because we've got slightly sidetracked by going on.
So you've listened to the gamut of opinion. I mean, we've got issues with DB Solutions, we've got issues with production. The self-shooting issue, which is directly affected large numbers of people.
I just wanted to add about the self-shooting that's been added to by the wonderful School of Production, which is actually enhancing so-called self-shooting by issuing a how-to guide, which caused a lot of interesting comment on the Guild forum because it was...
What's the School of Production?
It's an online website, John.
Numerous producers and APs have gone through 2 and 3 day training courses for lighting, for camera, for sound. What they've also started doing now is a series of web online tips. Is it the BBC College of Production?
Yeah.
Is it BBC Academy or College of Production?
What used to be called TV Train?
TV Train, yeah. And it's now a case of you get a sort of a young AP doing a small, it's like a two-minute news item, but done in the kit room. And the one that caused a lot of problem is a young guy showing how to set up a camera, giving some basic shooting tips about how he would go about shooting a series of interviews and a series of bit of actuality during the day. I wouldn't mind, but if he his arguments that he was using for the production of those items would only suit very, very specific productions, but he was giving them out as gospel. Now, the problem is, other people then are told to log on. Say you're a young AP, you've been given your first chance, you've got to go out and shoot an interview. Okay, get straight on the internet, you find the College of Production website, you see this other guy who looks a bit like you, sounds a bit like you, you think, great, he's the guru. That then becomes the norm. What that person is saying on these little web videos then become the norm in terms of production. You say, this guy gave some quite interesting advice on a couple of things about checking your equipment and what have you, but he also gave some completely erroneous factual information about the technicalities. Things that all of us in this room would take for absolute granted, saying things like, he said, oh, you don't have to worry about the colour balance numbers and you don't have to worry about the exposure. Well, they're the two most, apart from focus, they're the two of the most basic things you do as a cameraman. And if we turned out, if we didn't adhere to those, we wouldn't be hired for the next job. But the BBC is sponsoring this information and putting it out as gospel. So the next young 23-year-old researcher, producer comes along and thinks that's the way to do it. And it comes on to the point, the final point I wanted to make about getting a seat with you guys is, and I made the point in the early OB meeting, where's the next generation coming from? You know, I'm probably the youngest person in the room. Sorry, guys.
And he's 70.
And he's 60. Yeah.
I'm trying to convince people of my age generation group to come and do something like this. They're not interested. They are still think I'm all right, it'll be fine. And the point we were making before in the last meeting about young people, they're not getting involved. So where is the next craft base coming from? It's certainly not coming. Out of self-shooters, I know probably three good guys. And even then, they probably wouldn't attempt half the things that we know we can do. If someone said to me, right, light this room for this interview, they'd go, they do good handheld actuality.
With daylight.
But we've been trained to do the whole gamut. We do it every day. So it's the next group of people that's going to come through, because we treasure the BBC itself, and the British public hopefully treasures the BBC and the British broadcasting as a whole. We are feted around the world, and I see this on my regular travels around the world. Yet it's falling apart from where we sitting. But the level of the skill base is rapidly disappearing, and that's something that we need to try and address. So again, it's a dialogue with the BBC, because if we're being constantly forced into sort of one-man banding and self-shooting as well, it's going to be fingers in dikes again. No one's moving forward.
The item that was on the website was also just struck me as being, somebody had gone up to the guy that presented it and said, right, you're not doing anything, go make a video. And it literally had that feeling of just being pushed.
It was grabbed.
It was grabbed. He'd been pushed into the kit room and was told to do something. Because apart from it was just poorly put together, poorly scripted put together, it was just not there. It was just a poor. If it wasn't,
it was probably a typical shot you would have done of your kids growing up in a badly lit living room. That's what it was.
It was not.
That was quality control on the BBC, haven't they gone?
There isn't any now, is there? That's what I'm saying. There's self-policing.
I tell you who has got stronger technical reviews is Sky. Sky themselves, because a lot of guys in the sort of who left the BBC went to Sky. These are the guy with the serious guy with the leather elbow patches and pocket premises. They're real engineers. They are actually scrupulous. And when I've done jobs for Sky, they will come after you technically if something is not right. And I've had people chase me saying, "Well, we've got a dead pixel in the shot. We you know that stuff. You see the stuff that the BBC."
What did you say?
It wasn't my camera.
Sorry, there's a chance for that.
Yeah, exactly. But there are people who are still interested in the technicalities and the sort of quality control. Mm. But primarily, the BBC, because it is the biggest beast in the jungle, unfortunately, everyone follows suit. So everything gets, you know, if they slacken. I mean, when I work with my American colleagues, I tell them what's happened to the BBC. My NBC colleagues, they're horrified because they trained on BBC manuals. Yes.
they see this as a sort of this bastion of quality. Mm. And like I said, it's all house of cards. It's not there. Mm. So everything you've heard so far, I know we've gone off a little bit of a tangent and we've had a bit of a venting session, but these are some of the issues that are affecting us day to day, and that's why this Explorer meeting has happened, so we can sit with you to find out, is this something that we can tackle together? And some of the issues, do you think these issues are something that we can tackle the BBC and other broadcasters with?
I think we can raise these issues. I mean, I do think that it's that the way in where they're most vulnerable is around their duty to the licence fee payer, you know, shortchanging the licence fee payer, yep. Lack of quality, all of that stuff. Now, if we can set up a dialogue with them, you know, that creates a context for us to raise it with them. Wouldn't the Guild, I mean, and this is not trying to pass the buck, because, I mean, we can work together on this, but it seems to me that the GTC could have a really valuable role to play here as well. Mm. I mean, we work with the we work with all the Canberra Guilds, actually. Yeah. We work with the BSC and with the GBCT and with the GTC on different issues. But, and again, you know, in my view, I realise I've kept the sound's been on throughout this, haven't I? I've been saying all sorts of things I probably would have rather kept private. But the advantage of having those relationships is that, again, it maximises our options. Mm. And very, you know, the way I perceive the sort of friendly division of labour between the union and the guilds is that the union is better placed to try to tackle the direct industrial contractual issues around people's pay and conditions and working life. But the guilds are usually better placed to address questions of technical craft and quality and quality control and so on. Now, we can do that too, but actually the guilds could come in on that quite legitimately as the reason why it bloody exists.
Yeah, I think it has tried to on several occasions, but I think most of the people around this table will attest to the fact that the guild that you're talking about has been, yes, they've tried to sort of approach certain people about those issues, and sometimes they've been fobbed off, sometimes they've had some sort of response. Quite frankly, the two go hand in hand. You know, technical quality and shortchanging is coming about because we're not being used.
I agree.
Yeah. So it's the sort of the lack of craft people is shortchanging. The two meet in the middle. And unfortunately, that's, I think, due to a dissatisfaction with certain areas of the GTC and the way it operates. That's another reason why Cameron Park was formed, because it was there were guild members, me included, who were saying, yes, the technical side about this, that, the other is fine, but we want something with a bit more bite to it, a bit more oomph.
Well, I'm not saying we can't pick it up, not at all.
That's the truth.
So fine.
What happens with the guild? Anyone in this room will know. Take, for example, my boss on Click. Sounds irrelevant, but it's what we should be doing. Is he took out a new mortgage the other day. He wanted to build an extension, so he took out the second part. The lady at the desk in his local Abbey National, whatever, said to him, oh no, that's got to be at a different rate. Bear with me, this is relevant, I think, to what we should be doing, is that he said, oh, sod you. He went to the CEO of Abbey National, whoever. I know they don't exist anymore, but whoever. CEO got onto it straight away, put it right. The Guild TV cameraman keeps writing, sending emails to some nobody at the BBC. The way I see it is if we can form a proper unit here, you accept us, you are the union that looks after it all. You don't go to that nobody. You go to that person who's just below the chairman and say, this is what's going on. And that's what really... Or the chairman. And what really, really counts in us coming to you is we know you're not going to piddle arse around with somebody in an office who doesn't keep that hoop. We know you're going to go to the big guy and say, this is what's going on, Mr. Big Guy.
The best one
what
in the
are you
world.
Going to do about it?
So the training and the quality control complaints and the technicalities, they don't come from the GTC. We want them to come from you.
Yeah. The GTC is... I'm proud to be a member. I've learned a lot from it and I still enjoy it. I'm not going to give up on it. But unfortunately, they are not a political body.
Sure.
They actively push themselves as non-political, non-partisan. They have sponsors. they have meetings, and there are certain people within the council, and they don't want to upset. They want to play nice with everybody. And that's one of the reasons we set up camera department, because things weren't getting done, and it's the same basis on this. They will pussyfoot around, and they will write nice emails to people, or nice letters, and they will then come back and say, there are people inside the organisation who do believe that we are on the right track and are with us on this, but bear with us.
Mm.
And there's only so long that can keep going, because eventually we will have borne along so long, I'm going to be collecting my pension. Mm. And Keith will still be...
I mean, there are people that still believe that being a member of the union is, you know, Red Robbo, Longbridge, and strike action, and that's why we lost.
That's why we lost one member of the cabinet department.
Yeah. You
know, personally, I'm not a political person, and I've said that on the forum as well. But I do believe in strong membership. People don't mind, I was just going to slightly change the subject to sort of push forward, unless it's too complicated. One of the things, again, I think would attract people from camera department to be interested in Dexter is if you could offer more benefits that are pertinent to those working in PSC. So, for example, hostile environment training, subsidised. I don't want to tread on Jonathan.
No, go for it.
Also, kit insurance. I mean, I know that there was one comment that was mentioned by Steve. He asked the union to help with hazardous insurance and didn't get anywhere. Fell on deaf ears, and I think it was another area of insurance he wanted help with. I know that not many people are going to, not that many people go to hostile environments necessarily by choice. But to be quite frank, if you're travelling anywhere in the world these days, you could be saved one day and not the next.
Sorry, I think we're going to need it for this country before.
Well, where this has come from, Martin?
Look what happened in London on Saturday.
I had bricks for
it. I've been in riots, several years ago, around the
north. I've done a hostile environment training course at my own expense, but I got a bursary through the Rory Peck Trust, which I did, turns out, in 2001. I'm not sure, Jonathan will correct me, but I think in 2004 they brought in legislation. Well, the production companies got involved with insurance companies to decide that, rightly I guess, all hostile environment training should be renewed after 3 years.
For insurance purposes.
And you should do a refresher. I haven't bothered to renew mine, largely because I can't afford to, because I can't get another bursary through the Rory Peck Trust.
Because you've already had one.
Because we'll have one, yeah, absolutely.
How much are these days? About 1,500 plus, that's not a union thing,
that's an employer thing. They want you to go to a crap.
Do you know what? Because
I agree, but.
That they should be giving you the training, not Becto.
The trouble is, I had the BBC did change it because I refused, because Panorama wanted me to go to Iraq in 2003, and they were expecting freelancers to pay for their own hostile environment training. That has now changed. If there is a budget available and you are a chosen person to go, they will pay for you.
But I
know cameramen who want to get into that work, A, because they think it's lucrative, B, it's on a string to their bow. Tony Muse, for instance, who's on our camera department, he paid for his own hostile environment training. It cost him over £2,000. Mm. The BBC deal with Tour/Pilgrims is £750 per delegate for a 6-day course. Now, the union has very strong links with Aon, already for the PLI. What Andy's hinting at is, as camera department, I started talking to my broker, and I got 30-odd of us together for public liability, employer's liability, and kit insurance, and public indemnity, because we were sick to death of being screwed over by a particular broker who specialises in our industry. But again, that's only a few of us. That's 35 out of 100 and so. With your backing, again, it's another element, it's another area, because many, many guys have become so disaffected with the idea that the union, because they think the union is for people of yesteryear. It's not. They think it's not relevant for now. So we need together with you to make the union relevant to people, for the cameramen of 29 and 30 who are thinking about buying their first camera. What can the union do for? Now, obviously, we have to approach you to say we have these issues, we have these problems. But I know you have the open days and what have you. But it's encouraging people. So I'm hoping out of the back of this, we can give a favourable report to our people that we know. and spread the word. It takes time.
It does, yeah.
Mm. But I want to start feeding things into you guys to say, actually, why can't you do this? Why can't you do this?
Well, and the answer may be, actually, we can. Thanks for the idea.
Yeah.
I mean, we have actually, in terms of insurance offers, I'm trying to remember what particular set of risks it was. But there's a new package we offer to people now. It's not blanket coverage like the PLI. You know, it's an individual premium thing, but we've negotiated a decent rate. And it came up at annual conference a year or so ago, and it's now available. It was a really good idea from a freelance branch, and now it's there.
I just think it's just there were so many people that have, in response to Mike's pledge on the forum, have just come back and said, well, the only reason I'm still in debt is because of the PLI.
Yeah.
And it just strikes me as, well, okay, let's change that. I mean, apart from getting recognition for this department, change what the benefits are for freelance members, particularly, I mean, this group can benefit hugely.
And perhaps first of all, tell
things.
Them what the benefits are already, because actually, I speak to long-established...
People just see the only benefit they get from the union.
I know, but maybe that's because where we're falling down is not telling them of all the other stuff that's already there right now.
Well,
which is our fault. I'm not blaming anyone but us if we're not.
I say, in the greatest respect, you're actually a small union.
We are.
You're a small union. You are not anarchists. You are not.
No, we're not.
Why
can we not negotiate insurances as the TUC rather than as BECTU? So it comes down all the way through the TUC. And it's millions of us instead of a few thousand of us.
Except that what we're after is very specific.
That's the problem. Even though we are a small industry, it's also a very profitable industry, and that's the problem. That's why we've been had over barrels by various insurers over the years.
Somebody used an electrician as an example. An electrician is in not our union, but in the other one. Okay, whatever it is. If he needs indemnity like we do.
No, I hear what you're saying, Mike. I think it probably would be with other unions in the TUC with freelance or casual members in large numbers.
I tried to get one of our members back the other day, and his big problem is he doesn't earn enough. Like a lot of us will not be earning enough soon. So we can actually, at the moment, we can actually afford the BECTU subs. Mm. But there's a lot out there that are just not earning enough.
But it's a percentage of your income.
Yes, it's a percentage, not a flat rate.
You can apply for hardship as well.
Is there not a way, if we get this and you get recognition, I'm only talking if you get recognition from the BBC, I'm not talking anything else.
Yeah.
Is there not some way we can say, BECTU can say, we've now got enough people together to get recognition from the BBC. If you're interested in what we can do for you, we will give you a greatly reduced subscription.
Introductory offer.
For the first year or something. And if we, as a union, if BECTU as a union doesn't perform for you, fine. But if it performs for you, you pay the same as everybody else on this table.
And
you're getting them in, and then when we win them over, because we've started this thing, and you've gone and got recognition, then you've got this and this from the B. Is there any way we can?
Make it easier.
There's a first year introductory offer. I mean, now there has been for years. It's a standing offer. I think the question is the level it's pitched at. I mean, it's £120. Whatever your earnings, it's £120.
Right.
Which, on the 1% formula, that's equivalent to... So if your earnings are £12,000 or more, then, in a sense, you're doing okay. If your earnings are a lot more than £12,000, you're doing very well, on the 1% formula. And then from year two, we ask people to pay on the 1% formula. But the deal always is that if your earnings dip, because a freelance career is a freelance career, tell us, and... sometimes we ask for some evidence, and we will agree with you the appropriate lower level of subs depending on what's going on right now.
It's not clear enough. Somehow it's not clear enough because there are people out there saying, for an example, I know the cameraman I'm talking to might, if he's lucky, take home 20k a year, and he's paying £300.
Okay, so we should be talking to the office. Yeah, there's something wrong there. I don't understand that because we've had this discussion. Well, the other thing I would, every 2 years you get a thing saying we're charging this much if you don't agree with us, let us know. That's right. Well, the other thing I know because I've just run this trade fair down in Bristol,
I'm not saying this is going to happen again because you have to get Jerry Morris's approval, but as an introductory offer
at that trade show
and also at BVE, any new member to Bectu was getting £90 for a year's membership, and that also included PLI.
Fantastic.
Well, that's not.
Are you approaching the likes of Ravensbourne and Bournemouth and Ashington, because these those colleges that are still doing bona fide high quality media training, are you basically sort of, you know, are there graduate ceremonies? You should be saying, here you go, here's a union membership to go.
They are certainly. What was the third college you mentioned?
Ashington.
Used to be. Ashington in Northumberland.
Absolutely. Yeah. Basically, you had Ravensbourne, Bournemouth Film and Television, and Ashington Ashington in Northumberland was the same course as Ravensbourne.
Okay.
And whether it's still going on, I don't know. But they were exactly the same course.
Well, the first two. You need to whack out in our mag or our online real big strong bullet points so idiots like me can pick them up. Pass them on, because I'm just not able to translate
the figures
and the benefits to other people, because either I haven't got time or I'm not reading it properly. But if you could whack out,
it's all on the website as well. So
is it?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people that got this mindset against
I'll come back to your question.
To object to them. They almost prefer not to find out whether it's true or not because they want to keep their prejudice.
And we have a new generation behind us who have not known any
difference.
They don't even have the prejudice. The answer on the colleges is yes to Ravensbourne and yes to Bournemouth. They are both skill set academies. There's a number of, I mean, part of our problem, one of the things we've been working on strategically, if you like, is trying to separate out the decent colleges and courses that are out there from the frankly crap colleges and courses, which have been riding in on the media studies, media production boom, running awful courses, ripping off young people, claiming that this is their gateway to a career in film and media and so on, and it's not. And part of that process has been that we, and Skillset has come with us on this, they have now got a sort of quality control arrangement whereby they go out and visit these colleges and assess the courses, and they brand some of them, the best of them, as academies, as skill set academies. And those institutions are doing a reasonably good job. And those institutions also are the ones that we go out and speak to. We send out people. I mean, you know, I go out, all my colleagues, we go out, we try and sort of get round them all. We speak to the final year students. That's what we aim at, because it's a bit silly speaking to them earlier than that, because they'll forget. We invite them to become student members of Bectu there and then, which they can do, doesn't cost them a penny. And then once we've got a contact with them, once they graduate, we basically say, well, now's the time. You know, and they only pay a very, very low fee, not 120 quid or 90 quid, I think they pay some 50 quid or 60, to become, if they've just graduated and they're in their first year and they haven't even started getting work yet, we make sure we don't frighten anyone off just for financial reasons.
Okay.
And that's how we try and get them in.
Okay.
Ashington, I'll make a note of, because I'm not sure.
It's a long time ago since I went up there, but they were running exactly the same.
Okay.
When Ravensbourne was the BTEC HND course, Ashington was the sort of the northern equivalent.
Right. Okay.
Can I just bring up? I don't think there is a way around this kind of because it is an open marketplace, but the disparity, the rates that have been openly discussed on Camera Department Forum, we haven't really discussed it in an open meeting, compared to what's happening with Films 59. Now, you can't blame Films 59. They're an independent production company down in Bristol. They were approached by the production manager for the one show. There are two strands down in Bristol, features and natural history. And that production manager did a deal with the hire manager there to provide the 500 camera, PMW 500 solid state camera, with sticks, high def monitor, an HJ 11 with doubler, and either an HJ 18, which I believe goes over 300mm with a doubler, or 40-1 zoom lens for £250 all in, on the basis of he was going to get 80 days work. Now there's absolutely no way any freelancer can compete with that, but I'm not saying that Bet2 can do anything. I'm just, that's the problem we're up against.
So that's got to be 80 grand with the kit.
He's got a guarantee. It works as a business plan for that hire company. They're expecting a freelancer with a camera sitting on the shelf.
The thing is, when all that camera gear that's been allotted at that price is gone, the problem is John gets rung up by the same show saying, well, we only pay £250 and you can't compete.
The other thing is they're not coming to one cameraman and saying to that one cameraman, will you work for us for 80 days?